How do we grow? How do we give to each other? We talked last night about the glitches. We talked about the little squares that can kind of run things. And as I told you early on, my goal ultimately is two things. To give us some categories for why we can be such knuckleheads in our relationships, and thereby give us some traction for, I keep seeing myself getting riled up with anger about this particular issue or when these kind of things happen, and start being curious about it. The software, the ABBA dynamics, we'll be questioning, like, where might that be coming from? And I want us to do more of that this morning, to reflect on, given any symptom, or I'm angry, or I cry all the time, or I'm anxious, I want us to kind of play with that and what that looks like and how we can use that to make sense of, like, why we act, how we can use our ABBA model to make sense of why we get hooked into symptoms and stuff. But secondly, I kind of wanted us arm in arm, remember? I want us to be in that place where we say, we're all a bunch of people who are struggling and who have glitches, and welcome to the club, and stop living in that place of blame that's been our default mode since Adam and Eve, so we can kind of get out of that place of, like, you know, just what's wrong with that person, you know? And instead, have a sense that we're all kind of broken together. And that to me is community. Not y'all all, you know, get along better, but can we have a vibe of safety together as, you know, sort of fallen, broken people, all right? So today we're going to look more at cool stuff that we can do with relationship that can actually help us grow, how we can move forward. I'm not going to leave you in the little square ball pit. I want to give you sort of some vibe of what growth looks like. I'm going to give you some of the ways I think about how to help people. Last night in Q&A, remember we talked about depression and we started talking about loss. Y'all had great questions on the phone. Ultimately, I want this morning to be more like that. How do we think about growth and becoming more Christ-like and being able to relate better together? I told you last night that I really believe, I mean, one of the reasons that I'm a therapist is that I really believe that life-giving relationship done well really is like the most powerful non-supernatural force to change us. I mean, there's like more powerful supernatural forces like the Holy Spirit. But in terms of what we got our hands on here, it's a game changer, all right? So we're shifting gears this morning to look more at, like, what does top-level love look like? We're told to love one another. When somebody is sitting in front of you and they're saying, dude, I'm just down all the time nowadays, what does it look like to love them there? Or when you're needing something, when you're struggling, what is it that you're really needing? I want to sort of make some sense of some of that. And this is applicable to so much of what we've been saying in essence, as you've heard my examples and whatnot. What we've been saying is applicable more just to your relationships, like people you know. I've been saying, you know, there's Bob and there's Susie Q and whatever like that. This is also really cool. I don't know where y'all's church is regarding like small groups or growth groups, but this stuff is will be really helpful in terms of that kind of group connection. Or if you have a group of friends who meet, I want to give you some categories for kind of how to love there, all right? So I'm going to look at what are the things that can get us unstuck from those little square places that we talked about last night. I want to talk about what does it look like to be a life-giving person? What does love look like when you put hands and feet on it? How do we become those kind of people? How do we find those kind of people? And if we're wanting to grow, what is it that we need? What is it that helps us get new software in the little squares, so to speak? And then I want us just to kind of go around and discuss all of that and do all your questions and all that. So let's talk about how growth happens for little squares, for incomplete software. And I'm going to start with you, where I started. about 47 years ago on the campus of the University of Mississippi when I discovered psychology, and I got captured by this question, probably because of issues in my own life. How is it, y'all are going to recognize this phenomenon, how is it that you can know something in your head, but you don't feel different in your heart? What's that about? In other words, I know I'm forgiven, but I don't feel forgiven. You know the feeling? I still feel guilty. You know? I can tell you about Christ's blood for me, but I'm still walking around kind of with guilt and shame. What's the deal with that? How come I can know I need to not act angrily at my wife and I still do it? How can I know something and I don't feel it in my heart? I call it the head-heart gap. And it's actually what got me into psychology. I'm like, I'm going to figure out what this head-heart gap thing is. You can kind of see that, right? I'll use a better pen next time. Here's another way of saying it. All of us have at least one area in your life where you're stuck. In other words, all of us have lots of areas in our lives where somebody could just say, hey, that ain't cool, bonehead, stop it. And we can, all right? That's not what we're talking about, all right? What I'm talking about is that one area you can't willpower, all right? And I'm sure you only have one. If you don't know what yours is, by the way, you ask your spouse, all right? I'm sure they can kind of get you rolling, you know, in terms of identifying what this area is, okay? So my question is, what do we do with the areas we just can't stop, or the places where I can know something in my head, but it doesn't change my heart, and your little square is stuck? Let me give you some hints just to be reflecting on. Depression, relationship issues, not having boundaries and connection and problem solving and conflict and emotional management like we talked about last night. Or how about just spiritual dryness? Like, you go to church, you do the religion thing, but there's not that, this passion for who God is. Anger, forgiveness issues. We can talk about forgiveness all you want tonight. Several people mentioned it last night. Anxiety, habitual sin, areas where we're stuck. Does this sound like anybody you know? All right? What do we do with those? Now, there are different models if you look around for dealing with those kind of things. One is kind of the willpower model. Like, here's this area in your life, and the willpower model is sort of like, God's good, you're bad, try harder, right? That's kind of the level. And that actually works on a lot of areas. There are a lot of areas in which you should just try harder, but it won't work on this one, okay? Besides, most Christians who live out of just the I ought to be doing better willpower model end up getting lost in kind of a cycle of futility. They feel like failures all the time. They have an area in their life or a sin in their life or struggle or the way they are. I'm too shy, or I get angry and pop off at people, and by golly, I'm going to stop doing that. And they try and they pray about it and they work really hard, and then they do it again. And they're like, oh, now they feel all this guilt. And so they go, I don't know, take a 1 John 1:9 bath. You know, if you forget, confess your sins, he's faithful and just to forgive you all your sins and cleanse you of all unrighteousness. Okay, let's try again. And that's the Christian life, you know. So let's just kind of try really hard. And I see so many Christians who just feel stuck and kind of like these failures. And like I say, willpower works a lot. But it won't work on at least your one thing. And here's why, if you think about it. Your willpower is actually as fallen and broken as you are. You ever thought about that? I mean, we act like our willpower is this, you know, superpower force over here that I'm just supposed to, if I could only engage it better. No, it's part of you, and you're messed up. So, you know, your willpower is not your best friend in a lot of these situations. Sometimes we can spiritualize problems, like I'm stuck in this area. And I had a lot of people say, when they hear me talk about therapy, they're like, well, you know, only the Holy Spirit can change the heart. And that's true in lots of ways. But God tends to like us to work out our salvation with fear and trembling, knowing that he is at work in us. Okay, so in other words, to put it in like non-churchy language, it's a team effort, all right? He likes us to pitch in some, all right? Sometimes we Presbyterians, we can go the you need to know better doctrine method. That's just another version of the you're depressed because you don't have enough faith, whatever. Well, all these work to some degree on lots of things, but not on that one or that two. Or that five, or, you know, however many it is. So we got problems. And as I mentioned last night, and this is key again, most of us don't like those problems. You know, I hear a lot of times people calling Christians kind of to stop sinning like we like it or something. You know, like most Christians, most sinful Christians who I work with aren't like rebellious, like, hey, dude, I'm saved. Party on, you know? Most Christians I work with are exhausted. That's why I do conferences like this and try to give, like, some tools and handles to think about our brokenness in a different way. Most Christians that I talk to are tired of trying, and we're tired of failing, and we're sick of ourselves, and we're sick of this junk. And we live that Romans 7 experience we talked last night, that we don't want to live that way. At least repentant people. I keep mentioning repentant and unrepentant people. We'll talk more about it today. But, I mean, all of us are unrepentant about something. But a general orientation of, I don't want to be this way. So I want to give you kind of a way of thinking about growth that's, I found to be very powerful. I've actually been surprised at how powerful it is as I've been in my practice. I was talking to a client two weeks ago, and he had really changed so much, and he said, you know, I mean, I trusted you, and I knew that this would help, but I'm really kind of surprised it actually helped. And I said, I've been doing this for 36 years. I'm still surprised. Like, oh, this stuff really works. Okay, all right. So I want us to think this morning about how we get better, how we grow, how we get across the head-heart gap, how we change that gut level, how do we grow in those places. And that's why I'm going to need your help, because I'm going to give you some principles and some themes, and y'all are going to help me craft those. But then, again, major, like you did last night, help me put meat on the bones. I used to call this, I did a version of this in Sunday school at First Press Jackson for years. I used to call this whole topic sanctification of the heart. In other words, not just sanctification of I'm going to act better, but what I would change my innards, says the Mississippi boy. How you changing your innards? On the other side of the spectrum is Augustine, who called it the transformation of desire, which I think is a lot more elegance than my word, but, you know, that's me, Augustine, me, whatever. And I'm going to begin talking to you about my model by answering the puzzle, the question of the head-heart gap for you right now on Saturday morning, February 21st at 9:45, which I actually, as you're kind of maybe picking up on, I feel like is a little bit of a ripoff. Because, like, it took me, like, 15 years to figure out the answer to this question. And all you guys got to do is show up and eat tacos on a Saturday morning, and I'm going to tell you the secret of the universe for free. It's like, crying out loud, this just isn't right. Yeah. Here's the reason. Here's the secret. We learn the stuff in your head. I know I'm forgiven. I know I need to trust more in God. I know I need to manage my reactive anger. We learn the stuff we learn in our head from teaching, podcasts, conferences, sermons, books. In other words, you learn the stuff in your head through what you learn, right? Where do you learn that gut? Where do we develop that sense that says, I don't feel forgiven? Where do we develop that sense that says, ooh, I'm afraid I'm not going to do good enough? Or maybe those people won't like me. Where do we get that sense? You heard hints of it last night. We get that vibe of our gut through what we experience in relationships. And those are apples and oranges, ladies and gentlemen. That's why you can feel, know one thing and feel something else. So, secret of the universe number one for this day is the only place that we really develop that heart, that gut, that inner emotional place, where we get the vibe for those places is what we experience in relationship with other people. And this is going to be key for us all day as we talk about what makes people grow. So point one, in growing in our ABBA software, you got to do it. With someone else. Now, to be honest with you, I don't particularly like that rule. But I don't get to make this stuff up. I wasn't the architect. Somebody who designed us says at these core levels, you're only going to grow in those places where you connect with somebody else. I would much rather take my most private sins and the places where I struggle and hurt the most, where I feel the weakest and most stupid or vulnerable, and sneak off into that plant closet and be able to kind of fix it and come back out kind of shiny and new and y'all be impressed with me. But for some reason that I don't understand, and I should understand it because it's my job, but I don't understand how my iPhone works, but I know how to work it. But for some reason, I don't understand. Inside, we will only grow at those core places in a place that someone knows about, all right? The term growing alone at that heart level, at the little square level, growing alone is an oxymoron, right? Like jumbo shrimp or legal brief. Or this page intentionally left blank. You with me? Okay, good. That one takes a second, but yeah. All right, so we heal and we grow with. So last night, we're talking about, hey, y'all, community is cool. And here are the ways in which we're broken at it. And can we be together in the body in that? And can we be little squares? And can we make room for one another? And can we stop blaming each other? And can we have some categories for what that means? Today, we're going to start to learn if we can create community, and this might even just be one person at first. If we can create relationships in which that little square dynamic, what my gut, what my heart experiences can be a part of it, that withness is going to be a cool matrix of growth. As I said, maybe the most important place, source, power source for growth that we have. That's our topic today, all right? And it has to be people. All right? Again, I don't like that one either. But I see so many Christians, and they're struggling, and they're hurting, and I'm like, you know, where do you bring this? Who do you talk to about this? They're like, well, aren't we just supposed to bring everything to God? And that sounds really pious and everything. But they're alone. And I don't think that's God's message. This is something that's very important to me in the Christian community, to be being a missionary for this. For some reason, I don't understand. Again, you're going to hear me talk about a lot of things today I don't understand. God decided that his grace and his goodness and his mercy and his truth would be manifested not one way, but two. And we forget the second way. Certainly God engages us immediately. I felt his presence when I was moved to write the one story. Presence. I felt his presence here last night. Didn't y'all? Just his vibe with us. God, is that an okay word to use with God? Maybe at this church, not at my church. Okay. Yes, sometimes you get a burning bush, baby. You know, he's there, all right? But for some reason, that's his immediate presence. But the other thing that he likes is immediate. I promised you I wouldn't write low. Sorry, I'll move to the other side. He loves mediators. I don't know why God loves mediators. He loves mediators. Read the Bible. You know, he doesn't go to the Pharaoh and say, let my people go. He's a burning bush. He could have done that. He sends Moses. He loves mediators. He doesn't go to all the kings and the people of Israel through the prophets. He sends the prophets. He loves mediators. And yes, every good and perfect gift comes from him. The only reason a mediator has anything to bring is because they're coming from him. Anything good you get from me, thanks, John, good job. Anything you get from me is a manifestation of something of who he is. Anything good you get from me. He loves to work through mediators. I love that place in 2 Corinthians 7 where Paul says, God who comforts the depressed comforted us with the coming of Titus. I'm like, okay, I'm depressed and I'm praying for God's deliverance. I'm hoping for some glory moment, baby. And in walks Titus. I'm like, it's like, thumbs up. Love Titus, yeah. But he comforted us with the coming of Titus. He loves a mediator. The passage in 2 Peter, how's it go? Each has received a gift. Use it in ministering to one another as stewards of the manifold grace of God. Now, the word stewards there is the word diakonos. Does that sound vaguely familiar? It's where we get our term deacon. And if you look at kind of the gritty Greek version of what that word means, diakonos, it means a server. It means like being a waiter. It's like minister to one another as waiters of the manifold grace of God. Here's God's love. I'm John. I'll be your waiter this morning. I didn't make this. It's his. All of it's his. But for some reason, so much of the reason community is important. Remember, I started off last night talking about my dear client who shared with her Bible study group the pain in her marriage and how much they gave her. One of the reasons that community is so valuable that we would engage it with this much intensity this weekend is because this kind of connection is that waiter. It is God wanting us to bring one another what is good in him. And I see so many Christians who've forgotten that. So many Christians who feel like, no, you should just bring everything to God. Yes, you should. To God and what he provides. Both of those pieces have to go together. And if we miss the what he provides piece, we'll end up wondering, and my walk with God is so strong, but I'm still so depressed, or I'm still so anxious. And it's because we're not using one of his favorite ways to engage us. Does that make any sense? So, we can enjoy connection. I'm loving being with y'all. But that kind of connection is also one of the most powerful ways that we grow, like the plant in the closet. If we get it out and start getting it the goodies it needs. So, bottom line, if you want to make sense of your screwed upness and grow, we got to talk to somebody about it. So, this is kind of how it sounds sometimes. I will talk to that guy. Remember, I was just saying, I know I'm forgiven, but I don't feel forgiven. I talk to people like that all the time because we're all kind of like that. So I remember one guy I was talking to like that, and I said, he says, I just live with all this guilt. I confess my sins, and I just don't feel like God forgives me, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever, like, come to someone and really shared with them, like, the way in which you really failed? or something about you that feels shameful or you feel stupid. They've ever like really hurt somebody and come to them and said, I think I really hurt you. That was a really jerky thing I did. You ever come to that person and you like look in their eyes and they see your frailty or your sinfulness or you see the hurt that you caused them in their eyes. And their eyes look at you. Have you ever experienced this? And their eyes soften. And their eyes say, I'm just sad. You're just feeling like just now you could tell me. I know you struggle. I struggle. Let's start eating lunch together. Let's struggle together. Have you ever had that experience? And to the last, these people go, you kidding me? No way. No, not a chance, you know, whatever. And besides, like when we were growing up, I mean, you messed up. Mom would never let you hear the end of it. And you kind of go, I wonder why he doesn't feel forgiven, all right? Because his experience doesn't have that dynamic that would build that sense of freedom from shame, okay? We experience it in relationships, all right? Now, relevant to today and what we're going to do with this today, this kind of relationship has to take place in a particular context of relationship, all right? And I want to kind of give you some distinctions about that. In other words, we're talking about you're going to grow in relationships. It has to be a certain flavor. You're not going to grow developmentally in your soul from your Mahjong game group, all right? It's not just relationship in general. They're different varieties. Think about it. Some of our relationships are work relationships. Some of our relationships are just buddies. Some of our relationships are we love the same sports team. Some of our relationships are romantic relationships, whatever. But there's also a very important category of relationship I want you to have and I want you to learn about and take with you. And it is relationships that are oriented toward making us grow. And they exist all through our lives. But I call them developmental relationships. I want you to have this term. Because I want your relationships to have this gear that they can shift into when they need to, all right? Developmental relationships, it's a category I made up, frankly. Developmental relationships are relationships that are structured in such a way as that someone who has gives to someone who needs for the purpose of, let's make that arrow go up, their growth. And there's lots of different kinds of them. You have lots of them. You have had lots of them. Parent-child is a developmental relationship. Parent gives child. Teacher-student is a developmental relationship. You and me, right now, I mean, 30 minutes ago, we were hanging out. Now we're in a developmental relationship. We shifted gears. I am now in a teaching, giving position, okay? Coach and player, teaching. Close friends, safe friends, which we'll talk about in a minute. One of my favorite kind of developmental relationships after I got out of therapy, I did a lot of therapy. I recommend it. Is relationships with friends who get it. Friends who are safe, friends who are life-giving. Like me and my buddy Jim, my work partner, he and I are like best friends, and we will trade licks. It's like we'll eat lunch on Mondays, and it'll be sort of like, hey, can I have the couch on this Monday? You know, I'm the one in the need position, and we'll sort of take turns giving to each other, all right? Developmental relationships are when we shift to a place where I'm in a place where I'm struggling, will you help me, all right? And not all relationships are like that. And if you want community in which you are growing together, we have to have a category for developmental relationships. BT Dubs, this is an interesting throwaway. You podcasties, y'all have heard this on the keeping the baggage out of your marriage talk on the podcast. Marriages are terrible at being developmental relationships. In other words, it's a whole talk. Check it out. Bottom line is this. One of the major reasons we fight is because most marriages are, I'm big square, little square, you're big square, little square, and I've always needed someone to give me nurture and intimacy and connection and belonging. I never got that before. So my little square is like begging my wife to be touchy-feely and connecty to me. Problem is, what her little square needs is somebody to be big and strong and independent and not need her so much. Cue the theme from Love Story, all right? So the more I'm like, baby, I want connection. She's like, gross, no crybabies. And I'm like, see, you don't want connection. She's like, why can't you be strong? And we are little squaring each other to death. Y'all know my man, what? No dog. That's why there's a whole talk on the podcast about how we bring our baggage to marriages. We can only get those issues fulfilled in a developmental relationship. And if your marriage gets real on top of this, y'all can play that shift in roles game. Like, if you really are real bird's eye, remember bird's eye? If you can go really above the dynamics in your marriage, you can really be in a place where it's like, hey, babe, I'm really feeling lots of insecurity right now. And are you in a place where you could give to me there? And if she is, you can kind of take turns giving each other. But if you are like, I need you to be closer. Well, I need you to be strong. Y'all will fight like cats and, well, there's no dog, just ticks, all right? All right, so developmental relationships. Now, here's the key. Childhood parenting just happens to be the first developmental relationship we have. Hopefully, not the last. But it is the first. It's one of the reasons that shrinks are always talking about your childhood. All right, remember I said last night, it's not like, let's find out what your mom and dad did and blame it all on them. The reason we want to know about your childhood is because it's sort of like the answers in the back of the book, giving us clues as to what you might be missing in your software. Okay, that's going to help us, all right? So you go, well, you know, my dad never shared any feelings at all. I'm not going to go, your dad's so bad. I'm going to go, okay, so you didn't learn a lot about that attachment, connection, emotional management thing. Cool, got it. We're learning here. We're not blaming, all right? So childhood is the first developmental relationship, but it is not the last. So here's our point for today. If we bring incomplete parts of us, little squares, back into new developmental relationships now, currently, they can continue growing. Developmental relationships, a developmental relationship, man. And it doesn't have to be parent-child. You don't have to be little. If I'm bringing it into a new experience, it will help me. Remember my don't feel forgiven guy? I'm a new developmental relationship for him. That's what therapy is. It's all therapy is a structured form of biblical community, of biblical fellowship. We'll get more to that. We've turned it into an industry. But one of the reasons I like to talk about it in churches is because, you know, I think if God had his way, he would have that kind of growth dynamic taking place among us. More on that later. But anyway, so I'm this guy's new developmental relationship. And so I start listening out for these parts of him that don't feel forgiven. Remember, he doesn't have any experience of being seen in his brokenness or fallenness. So he said something to me one day like, he's talking about something, you know, always he's struggling. And he says to me, I don't know how you do this job. You must just roll your eyes. You know, the big whiner at 10 o'clock, you see, all right, what did he just tell me? What did he just describe what's going on in him? Shame. What else? Lack of worth. In other words, he just told me his heart. Now, I could tell him, no, Your heart's worth lots of things. You don't need to feel shame. Instead, I said, really? You think that's what I'm thinking? You want to ask me? And he's like, well, I ask you what? I said, well, you said I'm sitting over here like rolling my eyes. Who am I, 10 o'clock? Like, do you want to ask me what I'm thinking? And he goes, yeah. What are you thinking? Now, I got him. I've set him up. I've set him up for a new experience because it just so happened that I'm a pretty screwed up guy myself. And I could remember all the times in my own therapy in which I wrung my hands going, why am I not growing better? You must be sick of hearing me whining. And I felt compassion for this guy. And I felt this sense of like belonging with this guy. And I said, well, to tell you the truth, I hear you talking, and what I hear is not some eye-rolling 10 o'clock. To be honest with you, I hear somebody who's kind of like me, a fellow struggler. But that tells you something about me, that I'm kind of screwed up too. And he's like, really? What happened? He had an experience of someone breaking his rule, all right? So the place that we change that heart is in the context of relationship. And you hear what I did with him was just a strategic form. I was thinking about how to relate to him in a way that would give to his heart, okay? So we get grace when we experience grace in a relationship. Now, yay, great, cool stuff, John. Perhaps you can, however, begin to interpolate a problem with this model. Our Western culture has completely lost that kind of community. I mean, like, the reason that therapy appears on the scene about the same time as the automobile is not accidental. Because around the time of the Industrial Revolution, our culture began to sort of fragment and separate, and we lost that life of village community of people being together, all right? Like the if you read the Puritans, the Puritans are kind of cool. I remember reading something, and this guy was saying, the writer, I don't remember who it was, but he's like, and Brother Bartholomew, one of our beloved brothers in Christ, was taken with a grave melancholia. In other words, he was depressed. So we visited him at his home after Sunday services and regaled him. Brother Bartholomew's depressed, and these guys go see him after church and hang out with him and love on him. I'm like, I wouldn't need Lexapro either, you know? Brother Bartholomew was set, man, all right? That's what it used to be like. And actually, you know, I read this in like the great Christian journal, Vanity Fair. just to keep up on my, you know, spiritual growth, that before the 20th century, there was no record of PTSD in wars. PTSD started when community fragmented. I mean, you talk to people, Revolutionary War, any letters from the Civil War. I mean, what American Indians fighting the American Indian wars, what would they do? They'd fight their wars, and they would come home, and they'd build a fire, and the village would gather around, and they'd dance, and they'd tell the story, and everybody was a part of it. They didn't have PTSD. Why? Because they were together in it. Our military comes home and they, I don't know, what do? We don't know. They're by themselves. They have PTSD. So now we live isolated urban centers. Even the fact that we like celebrate Christmas as a family, that's sweet. We don't celebrate it as a village though. They used to do it as a village, okay? So culturally we are alone. So here's the problem. The very thing that we have in order to grow, our culture doesn't do anymore, all right? I started this small group ministry at a church in Atlanta in the mid-2000s. I was over there like once a month for several years. I would do that for y'all, by the way, just FYI. I come over every month. Just hang out. But anyway, on Saturday mornings, at this time, in fact, I trained all the leaders of the small groups to lead small groups. Like, your people come in. These were growth groups, not like we're studying Ephesians. This is more like, what does Ephesians mean to you? You know, I don't want to go just like be anxious for nothing. I want to create a context in which people would say, hey, I'm anxious for everything. Will y'all help me? You know, I know I'm supposed to do this, but I don't have a clue. And so I was training the small groups, like the kind of stuff we're talking about this morning. We'll, as we get more into the nuts and bolts of growth, you'll see more. This is kind of the stuff I was teaching them. And one of my people said he was talking to one of his friends in the church who was from Africa. And he was telling him how awesome this John Cox Saturday morning group training, blah, blah, blah. And we're learning to do this, and we're learning about connecting and listening, and we're learning about how to bring the truth in a godly way and all this. And he said, his African friend looked at him and he said, so you have a class on how to love. Yeah. We kind of need a class on how to love. So that's what this is. So we invented stuff like therapy and small groups, and that's all great and everything. But I really think that God has better answers to us than that. God knows we have not completed all of our little squares in childhood. He knows we're a mess. And he knows that the only place that we're ever going to grow is in relationships. I mean, he was here last night, right? He knows this. So what's he going to have to do if he wants us to grow? He's going to have to give us new relationships. And he's way ahead of us on this. He does. You're sitting with him. The body of Christ. What I call your second family. I heard this old black gospel preacher once talking about this. And he said, this is your God family. You got your original family? This is your God family. In other words, our growth and our development doesn't stop in childhood. The body of Christ is a developmental relationship. Just like parenting is, just like therapy is, whatever. It has the potential for that sort of power. And since our culture has lost this vibe of community and connection across the board, boys and girls, we got to create a new community, and I think we're doing that. That community is the church. And everywhere I go, even though I'm speaking on parenting, I always try to weave this in somewhere. How can we be becoming a safer, warmer place for us to bring the brokenness in the sense that relationship is the only place that's going to get better? It's what we call fellowship. Y'all know the means of grace in the Westminster Confession? Can y'all name the means of grace? Bible, prayer, worship, sacraments, fellowships. Always name last. It's the redheaded stepchild of the means of grace. It's like, oh, yeah, fellowship. That's because in our culture, you know, we've turned fellowship in most of our churches means free time between Sunday school and church, you know. It's like, y'all get here, we're going to have tacos and fellowship, you know. It's like, what we do. Or if your Sunday school teacher doesn't show, it's nice, fun, we'll just have a fellowship Sunday. All right. Okay, so. But what fellowship really is where we start finding and being the kind of community where we can get those nutrients. Think about all of the each others in the New Testament. I read you out of Colossians 3 last night. There's hundreds of them. 1 Thessalonians 5, encourage one another and build one another up. James 5, confess your sins to one another, pray for one another that you may be healed. Ephesians, be kind, compassionate, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. And here's the key. Paul and Peter and whatnot are not telling us those things in the New Testament because they're just telling us to be nice to each other. Those aren't in there because they're saying like, y'all be loving, okay, y'all.
God.
Okay, God says so. That's not why they're there. They're there because these guys know this. They know that how we treat each other and how we relate to one another, and I'll engage your pain, or I'll engage maybe even when you hurt me, will affect us and change us heart level for better or for worse. So they're saying, bear with one another. Confess sins to one another. God is teaching us what a developmental relationship looks like in fellowship, all right? This is one of the reasons a lot of people can feel stuck, good Christians, because what I find so often is they're using the first four means of grace. Dude, I'm still just filled with anxiety all the time. I mean, I've been praying, I've been reading my Bible, I've been going to church, I've been following sacraments, I've been a part of a Christian life, and I'm like, yeah, but they're missing the fellowship piece. And they're doing all four means of grace but one, and they get stuck, and a lot of reasons that's why, okay? So here's the answer to our original question, why can't we get unstuck in the places we're stuck, where we can't willpower the head-heart gap? You have to fix those things in the context of relationship. All right, so I want to talk about how we start to use that. And yes, I'm going to talk about the context of how we use that, then we'll take a break and we'll come back. All right? We have to fix these things in the context of relationship. Relationship is the soil for our growth. Fellowship and community is the dirt people grow in. One of the things that's funny about being a therapist, and one of the reasons I'm still surprised by people's growth, is because I don't make it happen. I'm a farmer. You ever think about it? Go make a seed grow. Go on. You can't. What can you do? What makes a good farmer? A good farmer knows how to create good dirt. All right? You can't make a seed grow and you can't make a human grow, but you can be good dirt. So my point of today is I want to help you to become better dirt. All right? All right? So what does that look like? Let's start talking about what it looks like to be what I call safe people. Or life-giving people, or heck, let's call them dirt people. It's Saturday morning. How you be dirt people? And as we do this, we're going to segue into talking about what does it mean to be life-giving with one another. Number one, who are these people? How do you find these people? Typically, people, I always talk about this, and people are like, well, who are all these safe people, these great people who you can bring your heart to? They do exist. Number one, you got to look for them. You got to keep your ear out for them, all right? I call them seashells often because that's how I usually find them. You know, you find them like seashells. You walk along the beach, you go, oh, wow. You pick up this pretty seashell. And sometimes it's like, you know, something growing in it, you know, and you throw it back. But sometimes it's like, this is a keeper. You know, take it home and, you know, put it in my bathroom. You know, I don't know what you do with shells, okay. but I want you to actively look. One of my clients this week was telling me that he met somebody at church, and he said, how you doing? And the guy looks at him and goes, I'm hanging in there. And my client said, I stopped and I paused. And I was all kind of ready for the fine, how are you? We're fine too. And this guy said, I'm hanging in there. And he said, I stopped and I looked at him and I said, hi. All right. Possible seashell discovered. All right. I was telling you about the guy I talked with yesterday who I went to college with. Dude, I found a seashell yesterday. Like, I'm not going to live the rest of my life not being interacting with this guy. I was, like, filled with love when I left. And I didn't expect it. He said, let's just grab a burger near the airport. I'm like, hey, been a long time, man. And I'm walking away going, you're awesome. You gave me good things. Look for them. And part of the reason that we're talking about all of these categories of growth and wholeness is because I want you to develop a good palate for them. And their honesty and their realness will be one of your tells. One of the ways I've wanted to relate with y'all this weekend is according to the way that I think safe, life-giving, loving people relate. I wanted to be genuine with you. I've not wanted to, you know, like be a poser or act a certain way. I've wanted to tell you about ways I've screwed up. I've wanted to play with you. I've wanted to, you know, last night I cried some with you for crying out loud. I want you to get a vibe for what good people are like so you can listen for them. They're honest. They're real. You see somebody in your Sunday school class, and y'all end up down at the nursery picking up your kids. And you're thinking, maybe she's nice. And you say, man, you want to like walk around a little bit longer and delay picking up the kids? You know, I could wring my kids' necks sometimes. And she looks at you and she goes, but children are God's precious gift. All right, maybe she's not going to be your special person, okay? Throw that seashell back in. But if she says, you know, but poison doesn't leave a trace, then it's like, we're going to lunch, girl, all right? All right, I found you. I found you, all right? We were walking into church not long ago, and there was a younger family, and I'm like, dude, how are y'all? How's your morning? And he said, well, aside from getting in a knockdown drag out again, getting ready for church, we're good. And I'm like, yes, you're real, you're it, okay? I file that away. Next men's breakfast, I'm going to sit by that guy. Don't say, where are all these great people? They're everywhere. I want you to start collecting them like seashells, okay? I want you to have that awareness. So you tell me, what's the first quality you want in a life-giving person? What do you need? What do you want to see? Huh?
A good listener.
Listener. Good.
Honesty.
Genuine. Y'all on a roll. Humility. Fun. Good, yeah. Not, yeah, right. What does fun tell you about somebody? Who's the fun person? All right, fun girl. What does fun tell you? With their fun, what do they tell you about them?
That they don't take life too seriously.
Yeah. There's a lightness to their heart. Right, good. What was the other one? Humility? Yeah. Availability. Y'all know what you're looking for, huh?
A little bit of wisdom or insight.
Good, yes.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Wisdom, insight, that they're not a bonehead.
Why is fun by itself?
Sir?
Why is fun by itself?
Why is fun by itself? Because it is a fruit of these more core things. Yeah. These are more like heart orientations and relationship. Fun is going to be one of them, one of the ways that shows up. Yeah. I'm going to put that here. Ooh, that's cool. ask you this. Who's hopeful guy? Hopeful, and yet how do you want to respond if you're hopeless? Yeah, good. All right. So in the context of their hopefulness and their sense that there's the possibility of goodness here, they're going to take some time and sit with you in the yuck. Yeah. Oh, we don't have that one yet. Consistent, cool. I'm going to do availability, consistency. Say again. Why might we be humble? They're broken too.
What about young at heart?
Young at heart? Tell me the qualities that young at heart would manifest.
It's an openness that goes beyond being an old man.
You know, so often when I speak at churches, I'm the oldest person in the room. And I think you guys are older than me. You know, I've had to cut out a lot of my jokes because they don't get them. Right. I used to do a parenting conference, and one of the things that I would say in terms of discipline is I always love to use what I called Gilligan's Island discipline. No phone, no light, no motor car, not a single luxury, all right? But nobody would laugh. They didn't know what I was talking about. Being young at heart right now. In other words, we're playing.
We are, and I think that relationship opens up things a lot more.
That's so interesting because humor and playing does something connecting, doesn't it? It's interesting. All right, as long as that is an adjunct to our relationship, because I also need to be able to tell you that, you know, I cried myself to sleep last night, and we're not going to have fun with that. But I want that category of your, okay?
They're like shared experiences, you know, sometimes they're
Yeah.
Like there's a mission for connection, but they're shared because you have something in common. And I say that I'm a parent of a special needs child, so when you meet that person, there's just something automatically. So I feel like, at least for me,
I'm gonna asterisk that shared experience because that is a good instant bonder, but some of what empathy is also parallel experience. In other words, you have a special needs child. My oldest child was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes at 13. All right. Now, those are different, but we both know the feeling of that vulnerability. All right. Even if I didn't have that, though.
Yeah, some people can come alongside anyway, but not everyone. And not everybody deals with the same experiences the same way, right?
Yeah. All right, I'm going to start categorizing these and grouping them, but there's one that you haven't named yet. This is really sweet stuff. I'm not always sweet, though. Is there anything else I might need? Telling the truth. Bunch of loser Presbyterians. Didn't even talk about the truth. They need good doctrine. Shame on you. In other words, if all your friends are doing is saying, oh, I get it and I understand and he shouldn't have said that to you and get new friends, okay? We need friends who will stab us in the front, not in the back. All right, so we've got kind of a nice balance here. By the way, let's start categorizing these in general. Think bigger for a second, more global. If you listen to me in an empathetic way and you keep my confidence, and you are not going to share the stuff, you're not going to bombard me with truth, you're going to try it on with empathy, what does that make you? What quality does that give you to me? You are safe. Now, remember John's little axiom, we're the plant in the closet, we're never going to grow if we're hidden. So where are we never going to go if we're not safe? If the healing process is going to take place in relationship, the first question we have to have is this person safe? All right? With repentant people. With unrepentant people, we often have to lead with truth. But we can get into that if you want. All right. So y'all are also touching on some of the qualities of safety, one of which is not judgy. Give me a word we use in the Christian world for what it means to not be judgy.
Grace.
All right. One of the most powerful ways that we begin with safety is I want to be in a position, if I'm going to be a safe person to you, and if you're interested in becoming a safe person, I want to be reflecting on to what degree can I hear your junk, even if it's sinful mess, and still welcome you. In what sense can I be that steward of the manifold grace of God? The first thing that's going to happen, it's one of the reasons that therapy is popular, because I'm legally bound to keep it safe, right? But in order to come out of hiding, I have to have a sense that you are safe to tell. All right, now y'all needed a couple of reasons, the things that create safety. The first one is I'm going to not respond to you by judging what you do. All right, why are we in a unique position to not judge other people for what they do?
That's the job of God. It's not
ours. It is God's job, not ours. Why? Why is it not our job? Why might I welcome your fallenness? Because you're just like me. In other words, we are all in a unique position to give grace. And in fact, I have a saying, and this is tacky, but I always say you can smell a therapist who's never been in their own therapy from the street because they think that the answers will work. They haven't tried and seen how impossible it is to grow. They haven't fallen on their face 1,000 times. They haven't tried to willpower those things and given up. They don't know what it's like to be a failure. And grace comes because I know how much something destructive. If they're repentant, I want to lead with compassion. I saw a woman once who came to me for depression, but she was regularly promiscuous. Lots of inappropriate relationships. And I decided, she wasn't a believer. I decided I was not going to go there. I was just going to help her with her depression. I'm not going to mention the promiscuity and you need to stop that and blah, blah, blah. I just went with the depression. And what I found was that in her attachment little square, she was so incredibly alone. And she was cruising the streets practically, cruising the bars practically, trying to fill up that hole. And what she started to experience as she was listened to, as she was heard, as she was not judged, as she was connected to, something about love and connection started to fill up that hole. And she started to notice it. and she started, her depression started to lift. And then she told me she wanted to stop her promiscuity. It's backwards with repentant people. By the way, this is a funny ending to that story. A year or so later, she came in and she said, we went out of town and we were visiting with these friends and they took us to church and the preacher was talking about stuff that sounded just like what you talk about in here. I think maybe you've been trying to teach me about God without really even, and I'm like, me? No, I would never do that. All right, so safety. Number one, the grace vibe of what you bring, I'm not going to judge. Number two, the listen vibe, the empathy vibe. All right, let's talk about that for a second. I forgot the time I'm supposed to stop to break. Will you tell me? All right, let's do a couple more of these, then we can. All right, somebody brings you a story. Make one up. I feel depressed. I'm mad at that person. My marriage is struggling. I feel anxiety. I have a porn addiction. Pick a card, any card. They bring you their story. The first thing I want you to do is shut up and listen. It's easy. A lot of times people are like, well, I don't know what to say when somebody, don't say anything, okay? As Job said to his counselors, oh, that your wisdom would be silence. For some reason I don't understand, he said again. Something about our hearts just being brought to somebody else and listened to and heard helps us heal, all right? Remember I said last night, pain alone is doubled, pain with is halved. There's something about just being connected to someone else and them hearing their story that's a cheap, easy, that's an instant field goal, your first drive. You get 3 points on the board for doing nothing, right? Why else might you want to just listen at first?
There may be more.
There may be more. Yes. In other words, you don't know Jack. And those of us with so much wisdom, we're ready to jump in quickly with our solutions. You know, you don't know their story yet. What I found is, you know, after doing therapy for so many years, after about 20 minutes, I can pretty much tell you what this person needs, you know. And then after 40 minutes, I realized I was completely wrong. All right, I'm still that way, all right? So that vibe you have of I know what needs to happen, blah, blah, blah. If we want to relate in a life-giving way, be curious. I was encouraging y'all last night to be curious about your own squares. Be curious about theirs. One of the ways I like to frame my job is that I'm a student. I am learning. You know stuff about you that I don't know, and I want to learn. Listen, step one, being safe. Grace, step two, listen. That's why God gave us two ears, but just one mouth, okay? So try it on. I don't know why it works, but it helps us learn the whole story because we don't know it. But you know what else it does? I think this is kind of fun. We don't know the whole story, and neither do they. This is one of the reasons we don't rush to fixing and advising quick. By the way, let me ask y'all. We're going slow here in the sense that we got grace and we're listening. But why is it that we're inclined to want to give advice and fix things? Why do you think we want to say, well, have you tried so-and-so? Oh, you're depressed? Well, you know, I started working out and it made me feel like, helped me a lot. Why do you think we're inclined to that?
I think it's because maybe we've heard 18,000 advertisements on, I won't mention a thing, but it's what I try to replace when people come to see me as a chiropractor. Replace their drugs, but they've heard 18,000 drug advertisements by the time they ever set their foot in their door, if they get to me before they graduate high school.
And therefore, people often want a quick fix. Right. Why might we want to give them one?
We're uncomfortable
We're uncomfortable what?
We're uncomfortable with their pain.
Because we're really the ones in pain, right?
No, it does. It helps us, but we learn from helping them.
Hopefully, if we keep our mouth shut. I want to go with this. Does that resonate with anybody? Kind of push my buttons. She said, because how do we advise and try to fix because we're uncomfortable with their pain? All right, what's it like to sit with somebody and they are just hurting? What do you start to experience? We don't usually do that. Weep with those who weep. What does that mean?
There's a lack of control if you can't fix them.
Yeah. The lack of control, you can't fix them. Here's something I tell young therapists. I call it the need to fix, and that's my issue. In other words, what young therapists do, or people who aren't good listeners yet do, is I feel like you've chosen me, and you've opened your heart to me, and I want you to leave here kind of going, wow, I talked to John, and that was awesome. That's my issue. I feel like I have this need, like I'm supposed to do something about it. Isn't that interesting? Notice that, because it will drive you away from the primary force for growth, which is being with them and being connected with them. Y'all might remember this from, I think I use it in the parenting conference and the marriage conference, both. Different places we can be with people when they're in pain. We can blow them off. We can try to fix them. Or we can be with. All right, so somebody's dealing with a death in their life. What does blow off do? Blow off's gonna like, I don't know, maybe you're gonna Romans 8:28 them. Hey, all things work together for good for those who love God. And you're like, get away. You know, or he's in a better place. He's with the Lord. I don't want your pain. Fix, how do we fix? They've been a death. Here's a great book on grief. Or, hey, after the funeral, let's go to New Orleans, and all right? What does with say after a funeral? Yeah. She said nothing. You know why? You know why? You don't know what to say at a funeral? Because there's nothing to say at a funeral. It looks like this. So with y'all. That was good stuff, see? Now you feel it's kind of awkward? Feel like you ought to be saying something? Don't. With. With is God's favorite preposition. Go read the Bible. He's always saying it. You'll walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I'll fear no evil because of course you're going to make it all better. No, you'll be with me. Lo, I will be with you always, even to the end of the age. Emmanuel, God with us. God's song of the covenant hints at it. I will be your God, you'll be my people, I'll dwell among you with. He loves with. And with means I'm not gonna fix your pain yet. What we're going to do is going to accidentally fix it. Just don't tell anybody yet because it's only 10:46. It's going to fix it, but if we don't try to fix it right away, if I'm with you in it, it means I try it on, I care about it, I engage you with it, I don't blow it off, I want to walk into it with you. That's that connection that is that developmental relationship connection that totally helps us heal. So, with... More on listening and that vibe about needing to fix. I had a really interesting experience this week. And there's this guy who had a cancer scare. And he had a diagnosis. They'd run a test. The results won't be in until day after tomorrow. And I'm talking to him, and I was in shock. I was a bit horrified, and he was shaking. And I really did not know what to say. Kind of like my little role play here with the death. I didn't know what to say. And what I finally said to him was, I kind of feel like I wish there was something I could do to speak into how terrifying this is for you. But I feel like any word that I use, any word that comes to my mind right now, feels like it would dishonor. And he started bawling. Did I help him? I didn't fix him. Can't fix it. Did I help him? He said, how did he say it? He said, I've been so afraid, I feel like I'm a head case. And you're not thinking I'm a head case. He just needed somebody to get it, okay? All right, another reason that we listen is that it clarifies. Like I say, people don't know their story. You know why shrinks are always going, it sounds like you're very angry. You know, it seems like you're feeling lots of feelings. It feels like you're very sad. All right? We're not playing Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood there. All right? It's taxonomy. We're teaching. We're actually giving them information. Most people don't know that they're angry. One of the things you can do when you're talking to somebody is just say, like, so you're mad at them? And half the time they'll go, life therapist. And I don't know what to do about it. And I said, well, tell me about your anxiety. And he said, well, I've got this presentation Tuesday, and I'm really nervous about it. I feel like it's going to, like, I'm going to totally bomb. I'm going to feel like an idiot. And I said, so what you're feeling is fear of shame. And he goes, yes. I said, you've seen five therapists. Y'all never talked about this? Like, really? One of the reasons that we engage people in hearing is because they really don't know what's going on, okay? Let me just talk about what feelings are for a second. And I'm going to talk about feelings, and then I'm going to talk about confidentiality. Then we'll take a break and come back to telling the truth and more dynamics about engaging each other. You've heard me talk a lot about feelings, emotions. Let's talk about that a minute, because feelings often get a bad name. Certainly our culture, you know, empathy is kind of the new God we worship. That's why I was chiding y'all for naming truth last. Within the Christian culture, feelings have always kind of gotten a bad name. Are any of y'all old enough to remember the old Campus Crusade tracks with the little train? Fact, faith, and feeling. And the engine of the train was fact, and the coal car or something was faith, and feelings were like the caboose. You don't really need a caboose, right? You know, so feelings have kind of gotten a bad name in Christianity, and some of that's warranted because our faith is real. It is true regardless of how you feel about it, okay? Feelings are a terrible source of objective reality. Like, if I don't feel like God loves me, or I don't feel like that truck is going to hit me, that actually has nothing to do with reality, okay? So they justifiably kind of get a bad name. But regarding relationship and regarding our hearts, they're one of the most powerful sources to know what's going on inside of me. They're going to help me learn. Remember the sense of feel from last night? What I feel, the reason I talk about them is because they are the sense of feel that gives me an indicator there's something wrong. If I'm depressed, people say this all the time to me, I'm so depressed and I don't have any reason to be depressed. Really? Well, I mean, you got a great swimming pool and a cool car. So yeah, I guess you don't have any reason to be depressed. But we find out that you're completely alone inside. I think you do have a reason to be depressed, all right? In other words, emotions are this powerful source of information about what's going on with us. They also connect us or disconnect us. They connect us in the sense of if you and I are hanging out and have lunch, and I tell you, can I tell you a story? Can I tell you what happened last night? My little grandson, who's just learning to talk for the first time, said, I love you, Papa. All right, those are feelings. We're now closer. You see? Isn't that interesting? Feelings are something that connect us. I just shared something more from my heart. That's why they're so important. Do they tell objective reality? No, but they just bonded us closer. Or the opposite. You and I could have a disagreement on something dumb, like how often do you change your motor oil? You wouldn't remember that. But if I hurt your feelings, if I insulted you during the break, and they say, hey, y'all, John Cox is coming back next year to do a conference, you're going to go, you won't believe what that guy said to me like 2 years ago. Okay? Why? Because I hurt your feelings the way we disconnect, all right? So that's why we're listening. Empathy, getting in tune with what they're experiencing, is this huge force of safety, which is where we begin and where we start to learn about who someone is. And that connection bonds them to us. Let me finish with this, and then we'll take a break. And that is, somebody said, confidence. I'd say don't get me started, but I'm about to start. A giant problem that we have in our culture is if we only grow and we're connected and known, guess what I'm never going to do if I'm afraid it's going to be all over carpool line tomorrow? I'm never going to be connected and known. It's like that woman I was talking about last night who joined that Sunday school class, and the friend said, don't share anything real in this class. They'll just talk about you. All right? Safe people will not tell, not even your wife. I can tell you, you're my wife. No, you can't. If I had wanted your wife to know about my drinking problem, I wouldn't have invited her out for beers with you, okay? Why is gossip so bad? Why? It's always tickled me that gossip is listed in Romans 1 with all those amazing, horrifying sins. Go read Romans 1 again. It's funny. It's like, and they are haters of God and perverse in their instincts and liars and slanderers, and they are gossips and they are murderers. And I'm like, whoa, my supper club is in like the pantheon of iniquity here. It's like, wow. Why is that? Well, because let's think of the things that John has taught us. Where's the only place that I will grow? In relationship. And what will I never do if I have this vibe that you're going to gossip about me or tell my heart to someone else and not keep my confidence back in the closet, which everyone else said that last night, back in the closet. And so I will never grow. Gossip is the killer of growth. No wonder it made the Romans 1 ranking. So, if we're going to create a foundation for safety and growth, it begins with connection with each other, making that a safe place. We're starting off with listening. As we discuss later on, we can talk more about what that listening might sound like and with the dynamic of keeping confidence and safety. Let's take a break. The boss will tell us when to come back. High five.